Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
And congratulations to Squawk Box on their new set. Good morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Scott Wapner with Jim Cramer live from the New York Stock Exchange. Carl is on assignment. He's going to be back later this morning for Squawk Alley. David Faber is at Warner Brothers Studio in Burbank, California. We'll have an exclusive. He will. With the Warner Media CEO, John Stankey. Looking forward to that. He's going to discuss the new HBO Max streaming service. Let's take a look at futures this morning. Some economic data better than expected today. That's the picture on Fed Day. Dow would open higher by almost 34, S&P by about 2.5, NASDAQ by 17. Our roadmap this morning starts with right there, the futures pointing to a higher open. After that stronger than forecast economic data, investors, though, staying cautious ahead of the Fed. Record highs within striking distance again. Plus, shares of General Electric popping after an earnings beat. The company raising its 2019 cash flow forecast. And streaming wars, AT&T set to challenge Netflix, Apple, and Disney, unveiling details for its upcoming HBO Max service. As we said, David talks exclusively with Warner Media CEO John Stankey, and that's coming up in the next hour. As we said, we're looking forward to that big interview. We begin first, though, with the markets, the Fed. It is Fed Day. Jim, the data was better than expected this morning. Still confirms we're slowing,
yeah.
So the Fed's going to be cutting, right?
The Fed raised too much. It is just a fact. Jay Powell overdid it. The economy couldn't take it. There are a lot of people who come on air and say it didn't matter. If you look at the mortgage purchase numbers this morning, it clearly does matter. Internationally, Scott, I mean, we're lucky. The stocks are doing far better than the economy. People aren't hiring international. They are hiring domestic. I think we need a cut. How many quarters can you have where numbers are bad because of the strong dollar? So, look, Jay didn't do it right, and that's okay. It's okay. I mean, people make mistakes all the time. We accept mistakes in other than for the New England Patriots in sports. We accept mistakes in school. We accept mistakes in science. Why can't we just accept mistakes in Fed policy?
Well, he's been trying to make up for it, if anything. Maybe this is going to be the third cut. What if it's a cut and pause? Is that a mistake?
Well, no. There'll be people who sell on that because there's probably an algorithm that says cut, pause, and they'll act immediately. So people who want to buy stocks should wait for the cut, pause. The greatest thing that Jay could do is say, you know what? I'm now going to take written questions like they do on the Netflix call. And he, you know, because last time he had people's like, hi, I'm from Woodrow Wilson High. What is that school? Woodard?
It's Springfield?
It's the high school in Washington, D.C. that everybody likes. In Bethesda.
Woodward.
Woodward. Hi, I'm from Woodward. I'm the editor-in-chief of the Woodward paper. And what do you think about going green? I mean, did you see that fiasco of a press conference? I mean, what did he do? Invite people from junior high? He has got to tighten up his game. He has got to say, you know what? I'm going to pause and I'm going to take a couple of questions, not a lot of questions, because I have other things to do. I don't really care what else he has to do.
He's
I don't care
stop,
if it's the Washington Nationals.
Stop acting like he plays for the Hilltoppers and
oh,
start
my God, he plays for the Summit
show?
Hilltoppers. It
now
is absolutely
show.
It's killing me that he is playing for the Hilltoppers, which play, of course, that's the Summit team. I coached a game. We beat Voorhees. I'm not kidding, Scott. It's amateur hour. It's amateur hour. He's got to be more professional. He's got to say, listen, I may pause. I may put the data dependent. And then we just say we can't take it anymore, and we turn on some pre-baseball stuff.
Yeah, David, you've got, you know, GDP coming in at 1.9. You've got earnings coming in better than expected, even though expectations were low. And there are those who are saying, why do we need a cut? And yet the market expects it, and we're likely to get it.
Yeah, I mean, you've spent a lot of time, and we've spent a great deal of time discussing this on your show, Scott, and on our show as well. And Jim has made these points many times that, you know, maybe there's one more or a couple of more because we went too far. I don't know. The industrial economy, perhaps not as strong as would like. Strong dollar, of course, a part of that. You know, Jim, you look at GE earnings, though, today, and you have to wonder again, is that a reflection of things getting a bit better?
No. No, that's it. That's just literally, David, I'm not kidding. That's Larry Culp rationalizing the company. And by the way, if the 737 MAX doesn't fly, those numbers won't matter. But I happen to think that Larry Culp is finally getting his arms around what was a pretty impossible situation. But David, I am not going to say that better free cash flow is related to the idea that the economy is better. That's related to the idea that Larry Culp has finally undone a lot of mistakes. Even Alsem finally looks like you can't find it. So I don't want to ascribe to that. I'd rather do like C.H. Robinson, which is a company that does freight forwarding. Miserable numbers. I just find, David, international is bad. My hat is off to Larry Culp because he has finally gotten control of power, David. He's empowered.
Yeah, well, I mean, right. That has been the key from the very beginning, as you know, Jim, getting their arms around power in terms of at least sort of putting it on a much steadier or stabilizing it, I guess, is the right thing
right.
to say. And that's a big statement you just made. I mean, if they really are sort of and have stabilized power and can at least have a sense as to where the business is going from here, that's a big deal because...
Yes, it is.
Culp has told us. I mean, it was, you know, a year ago when we sat down for his first interview, he certainly indicated at that time, and that's why the stock sunk, if you recall. Power wasn't done. So if... in terms of at least the bleeding. And so if that's the case, Jim, that's a significant moment for the company.
That's why, Jim, people like Stephanie Link bought the stock,
yep.
have added to the stock on the very belief of what David was just talking about and what you said. Culp, yep. he's gotten control of power, which was the breaking point.
Right.
So is the stock not a buy then if he's gotten control of what was one of the worst areas of the company?
Well, look, I mean, what happens if the 737 MAX is grounded in the first quarter? Okay. I mean, I don't think it will, but the numbers are too high. That said, long-term care, I regard it as being under control. No adjustments this time other than for having to do with interest rates. Wind is turning out to be as good, if not better, as nat gas. Remember, wind, it isn't always windy, so then you got to switch to nat gas turbines. That's a very solid story. Aerospace service is really good. I'm going to say you buy half. You buy half. I don't like the thing this deal on the run. Remember, we're going to have some hearings. We got Muhlenberg's. Whoa, you know, you got the 737 MAX.
I'd be interested in hearing, you know, David, until Stephen Tusa comes out, I guess, and gives his take.
He gave us a little.
He reiterated, two weeks ago, a $5 price target. Jim is furiously looking for his guns.
I know you don't know if you have a return or not. Yeah, Tusa was saying it was boring. It was boring.
He's got a lot of room over there. He's in my area. Get out of my area, Jim. All right?
Hey, man, stay out of my zone.
Out of sight, out of mind, man. You're out of here. He's going to do whatever he wants.
Tell you something. I got.
By the way, guys, anybody who tells you Southern California is not freezing in the morning is lying to you. It's like 27
degrees. Lose the vest.
Just lose the vest.
I can't stand it.
All right, tell us what Tusa had to say.
Here's what he says. The quarter was in line, and there is not much controversy here, though there is some need for clarity on a few items. Do you know, that actually sounds like a real company. It sounds like a real company now. I think Tusa is saying, listen, this is a real company, and I can start putting an actual multiple on it, David. I think it's very important, Mr. Cashmere. It's going to be like that. What? Okay. What I said?
You left him speechless.
All right. Listen, stock's up 9%. They could use it. But, I mean, we're still talking $10. It hasn't. It's hung around that level for a very long time now, Jim.
Well, what is that? What do you mean?
Lost $9.5 billion, didn't they, in the quarter?
Well, they had an $8 billion charge, but it was non-cash. That was said Baker Hughes. This company did so many stupid things. But, it's like Grubhub.
But you said for David's first question,
what?
Are things getting better?
He said is the economy getting better? Can you read through to GE to the economy? And the answer is no. You can read through the Culp's brilliant.
GE is getting better.
Because Culp has got, he's free cash flow. He's rationalizing the company. Remember, we've never been able to put a multiple in this company because it became cats and dogs. We have to move on? See, in my ear, someone says we have to move on. In reality, I don't want to move on. But then again, you know, this is not in our basement. It's a show. And we have to move on.
That's true. When someone says move on,
it's not Wayne's World.
Well, AT&T is unveiling its HBO Max streaming service. Dave, of course, has those details, if you couldn't tell by now, as to the reason why he is in Southern California with that beautiful backdrop and the vest.
Yeah. It's actually a sweater. He's right. I think it might even be cashmere. I'm not sure. And I need it because, as I said, it's really cold here. We're waiting for the sun to come up. We're also waiting to be joined by John Stankey, who is the president and COO of AT&T, also, though, running Warner Media. Of course, we're going to talk to him a great deal about what was their presentation yesterday, 3 p.m. Local time here, so 6 o'clock. A lot of people sort of digesting all the news that came out almost overnight, if you will, from 6 to 9 yesterday as they presented the plan for HBO Max. $14.99, of course, being a key price point here, very similar to what HBO is priced at with the 34 million subscribers there. The question is, how many will simply move to HBO Max, given there is really no price differential, given what you're paying most of your cable distributors for that? A lot of focus on all of the content, and particularly they kept coming back to the idea of breadth and depth and of trying to service areas and demographics perhaps that HBO currently doesn't hit as hard. Women, for example, young adults being another one, millennials, Gen Z, talking about the fact as well that the top 100 titles on these services drive 50% of usage in general at the SVODs. Also an interface that is, in my opinion, certainly seems far superior to what you certainly get right now with HBO if you use that digitally, and may rival, if not exceed, some of the ones that are already on the market. And not just using algorithms, by the way, Jim, but actual human recommendations in terms of what you might like. Don't forget the humans. But the key question here is going to be, will it resonate in the marketplace at that price point? Certainly with current HBO subscribers, yes. But will you be able to get the additional 16 million incremental subscribers they believe they will add over the next, let's call it, 5 years by 2025? That's a question. There's a lot of content there, 10,000 hours of library, 35 new shows right off the bat for HBO Max itself, and obviously all that HBO content as well. But it'll be interesting given where the price point is. Not that it was a surprise. In fact, it may have been a bit lower than some had anticipated that it would be, guys. A lot to talk to Stanky about, of course, around the top of the next hour.
So, David, part of the commentary that I saw this morning from, you know, the likes of Rich Greenfield say that to be successful in the streaming business, you need premier content, check. You need a tech platform, check. And you need marketing and distribution capability like they have, check. So they enter at a point of offense where a lot of the others in the streaming business or the fledgling competitors here don't necessarily have all of those attributes. You believe that?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, the question, of course, is how many streaming services is the average home going to actually want? Is it three? Is it four? But you have to consider that this is going to be in the mix. There's no doubt about it. If you consider a Netflix, Amazon already coming into your home if you're a Prime subscriber, Disney Plus, certainly if you have children. But given the breadth and the depth of content that they're going to have available here, beyond obviously HBO itself, what is the premium and what they maintain will still be the premium offerings out there when it comes to video, Scott, you have to consider that this will be certainly something that people will consider. But, you know, I do still wonder about the price point. I mean, HBO's been in the marketplace for a long time. It's got 34 million domestic subscribers. Netflix has a lot more than that. And that's a key reason. So because it's fairly expensive. And so you do wonder how much it's going to resonate with people who perhaps are on a budget, or younger people who are somewhat unwilling sometimes to pay for these kinds of services. And I think those are some of the questions as well. The investment's going to be fairly significant. They are saying it's going to be profitable by 2025. Jim?
David, let me give you let's just say a theory. When you and I used to speak to Mr. Bukas, who, by the way, is a great American, the idea that HBO was worth a huge amount of money, very undervalued within the mix, was something that was talked about all the time. Do you think, in order to raise money, that AT&T could spin off some of HBO?
I don't. They are all in here. It is central to their strategy, certainly at Warner. I mean, I can't tell you how many times the various people who took the stage more or less said, we're all in. That was Stanky. Everything starts with HBO. That was Greenblatt. They talk about DC and say, you know, we're all in there too. It's hard to imagine, given the focus that they have on this particular product and the importance they're placing on it for driving Warner overall, and obviously being a defense against the trends that we all know are so pervasive right now in terms of cord cutting, that they would ever consider doing that. I don't anticipate that or think that that would be a possibility.
So David, they're going to spend, from what I see, $4 billion on, they're playing the music. You know what? We'll come back to you. I know
yeah,
we got the music. It's either in the ear we got to go or the music, which tells you we got to go without the stuff in the ear. Up next, it's Cramer's Matt Dash as we count down to the opening bell. Let's take another look at futures. We were poised to open higher on some better-than-expected economic data. We're pretty much in a holding pattern there. Dow would open higher by more than 30, S&P by about 3. More Squawk on the Street from the New York Stock Exchange is straight ahead. All right, we're back about 11 minutes before the opening bell. Time for Cramer's Mad Dash ahead of the open, and we have
AMD.
AMD.
Now, Scott, you and I like sports. We make no secret of that.
Fair comment.
We often talk about how important coaching is. It's probably the most important. It's how teams win. Well, look at the coach, Lisa Su. She takes over a company that people have given up on. Bad balance sheet, really no roadmap for growth. Takes over right here. It's actually 5th anniversary. Look what she's done. I think this is the greatest turnaround story of our lifetime. And this quarter was excellent. Even people like Citi. Now, by the way, Citi, let's see, it's very funny. It shows you where people were. Advanced Micro, another miss, but got up. We expect share gains, but not meaningful EPS. Raising estimates, reiterate sell. It's got an $8 price target. $8. Mm. I think the train has left the station for this man. This quarter had a roadmap for growth. There'll be sellers. There'll be sellers because she did not say it is the greatest thing ever, because it's not Lisa Su's way.
Didn't they have a weaker revenue guide?
I went over every line of every single one of those. It's all systems go with the data center. It's all systems go with gaming. I think that anyone who thinks there's a weaker revenue line, you're missing you're missing some great orders in the second half and the first half of next year. Look, it's just a winner. And people have been itching to take profits. If they take profits, you got to own it.
Despite Lisa Belichick's performance.
Yes.
What's the overall read? You got AMD, you had Texan, which was a disappointment, and then some good chips in between.
Texan was Internet of Things. They have too much auto. They were trying to diversify away from cell phone. Analog devices, similar to Texan, but doing a little bit better. Intel, obviously, telling you that everything is fantastic in their market. The reason why I'm not worried about the revenue issue is she's taking share from Intel. And Intel had a great quarter. She's got the great data center chips. Her whole roadmap is perfect. She is so good. And you're right. The only thing that she's going to do wrong, she's going to come to Philadelphia and she's going to lose to the Eagles. We should start talking about her as being Belichick. Okay. It's really right. So Belichick doesn't have enough fingers for the rings. Lisa Su and her husband Dan are two of the nicest people in the world.
Just remember where you got that from, okay? When you use it on Matt.
I'm going to use it. Okay. I steal things all the time from you.
All right. We have many movers to get to this morning, so stick around for more Squawk on the Street. We're going to count down to the opening bell next. Welcome back. We're 6 minutes from the bell. Stocks will open higher. Opening bell is just minutes away. You're watching CNBC's Squawk on the Street live from the financial capital of the world. The opening bell set to ring in just about 3 minutes' time. Jim, let's go back to GE. It's going to be a big winner off the open. And as we said, the notes are starting to come through. I mentioned Stephanie Link to you. She sends to me, I've never heard Culp this confident and in command of the company since he started. I think the free cash flow inflection should have folks taking notice, not just for a day.
I think she's right. I mean, I really think that what you're getting here with GE is it is the turn. It is the turn. We've got long-term care in a box. I'm not as concerned about it. I was before. I wanted to see free cash flow go up. We've got that. Nice $650 million from an industrial company again. The pension plan, okay, we understood that. It'd take a hit. That one's solved. Wind is now making not a lot of money, but the renewables are doing well. Turbines, still issues with nat gas, but under control. And again, aerospace is fabulous. The MAX has to get back. Everyone's. David, when I look at at what's going on with this situation with GE, with Honeywell, with United Technologies. David, this Max is everything. It really is, because otherwise you want to own all these stocks. What are you hearing?
I only listen to what Phil LeBeau tells me, right? Don't you? So I don't know. I mean, how much longer is Muhlenberg going to be the CEO of Boeing? I guess that's where people seem to be focused right now, as much as they are on when the plane's actually going to return to service, Jim.
It has become the ultimate guessing game.
So TUSA,
everyone is making a guess about this.
The aforementioned TUSA is out with some commentary as well. No, quote, smoking gun here, but as always, the follow-up and details will be key for forward estimates, for which we remain well below consensus.
Well, you know, look, he can keep talking about that. I don't think it's about consensus. I think it's about credibility, which a year ago there was none. I think it's about the idea that there's no cash drain to the point that we should be worried about the common stock. I think it's about 2020. Culp has always said that. David, when Steve TUSA says those comments, the way I read it is, hey, listen, I'm not excited about the stock. But I no longer think it's a situation that is dire. Don't you think that?
Yeah, I tend to think that. I mean, Jim, do we feel like we're completely safe when it comes to long-term care? Are they done? Is this it? I mean, there are still questions. Don't forget Harry Markopoulos and his entire indictment, so to speak, of the accounting at the company as well. That seemed to have come and gone without too much impact.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I'm still waiting for the gigantic decline in the debt position. We don't have that. But that's what the free cash flow can do. I think that the damage here turned out to be not irreparable. Let's put it that way. And when I read what TUSA's saying, I think he's saying, look, I'll tell you, if you talk to TUSA, here's what he's going to say. He's going to say, I haven't changed my view one bit. There's nothing here.
That's basically what you take from his... No.
Well, I mean, I listen to Larry Culp, and I think, how can you not change your view one bit? If you have Stephanie Link at this point, I will, in a claymation death match between Stephanie Link and Steve TUSA, I'm going with the Linkster.
What do you think we can get for that on pay-per-view?
I don't know. It's up to what David says about Stanky.
$59.99 on HBO Max.
Oh, my David. God. Hey, it should be on that Ultimate Fight Club that they always keep pushing on ESPN Plus. It's the Linkster versus TUSA. And my inclination is that the Linkster has a combo, a 1-2 combo that will put TUSA right on the canvas. David, TUSA on the canvas versus Linkster.
Let me tell you something. Some dudes on my show have found out the hard way. Right?
Yeah.
Take on the Linkster.
Linkster.
You end up on the canvas.
She jogs. I used to, you have to get her to 355 because she's on the treadmill doing 10 miles starting at 4. Do you think TUSA does that? I am all in Stephanie Link. TUSA, step aside. 2 enter, 1 leaves. It's Stephanie.
In the octagon. Speaking of, there's a big match this weekend at MSG. All right, here at the big board, we did just have the Bells, the regional board regional management, a diversified consumer finance company, and up at the NASDAQ, Scholastic, the publisher and distributor of children's books and educational media. You know what stock I wanted to hit, Jim, as well? I wanted to follow up on Grubhub from yesterday. Schlubhub is what it's looking like this morning because it's down again.
I think he...
40% yesterday.
Well, I think that if you look at the subtext of his call, he took it from buy to sell. He did.
CEO.
Yeah, the CEO.
With the promiscuity.
CEO, well, not just the promiscuity. He's got to be careful because, you know, you got to write the, when you write the conference calls, you have to be kind of in the light of day, no offense. But there's a great Goldman piece, and it starts out with, we got it wrong. I mean, don't you love that? We got it wrong. I got to tell you, hey, David, remember when you used to have the Penguins or whatever it was with the thing in, with the analysts?
Yeah, it was Penguin.
David?
Yes.
This
is, I do.
I mean, this is a Penguin breakout, David. It's a jailbreak of Penguins. Worst I've ever seen, David.
Yes.
Worst I've ever seen.
We used to have them running off the iceberg. Of course, we looked for lemmings. We couldn't actually find the video, and so we went with the Penguins. And for years on the old Squawk Box, we used to use them to indicate the worthlessness of analysts in a case where they were just reacting to the news itself and of no actual help because none of them actually forecasted what might have happened.
Now, well, those morons should own a restaurant like I do.
Promiscuity, Jim. I don't know.
Well, look, I own a restaurant. Yeah. Well, my so wife owns a restaurant. She was making pizza this weekend, for heaven's sake. Lisa, memo to you. Can I go out to dinner and like at another restaurant besides the Longshoreman? And David, there is absolutely nothing to distinguish these companies. This is the ultimate commodity, except for one of them plays with venture capital money. And David, venture capital money is like going against nuclear weapons and you're conventional. And I, even though this guy gave up a lot to be able to get all these big cap restaurant chains, this thing is a disaster, David. It's a disaster. Second day, we have full out. It's kind of like radiation. The second day, there's downgrades.
Yeah, it's an interesting point you raised, though, about all that capital that rushes into these business models that aren't necessarily able to prove even profitability, but have the effect of overall depressing prices for the public entrants. I mean, think about, for example, Uber, which is up against Didi in some markets, both, of course, funded by SoftBank money. You're talking as well, I think, here about DoorDash, correct? Funded by SoftBank money.
Yeah.
Postmates.
David, if you have SoftBank money, do they give it to you and say, listen, you're allowed to lose every penny and more? I mean, because Adam Neumann seemed to do that. I'm not kidding. DoorDash, when I met with DoorDash, they're basically saying, hey, this restaurant, the Longshoreman, one day I go to the website and it says that DoorDash is our exclusive distributor. They're not. They weren't. And then they go and they buy Caviar, and now they are. I mean, they're buying business. They are making very little money. If anything, they're not making money at all. Not making money at all.
You think these things cannot stand alone as individual companies. I think Dan Nathan made a good point last night at 5 saying that they need to be part of a larger entity that can sustain some of the losses and lack of profitability. At least in the near term. I don't know. How do you compete?
It's a bunch of guys on bicycles taking food to somebody's house. That is not a great business.
Let me do this. We have some developing news as well, Jim. Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg arriving on Capitol Hill just moments ago for a second day of hearings, taking some questions from our Phil LeBeau seconds ago. Let's listen in. Take it back here. That's Phil LeBeau, of course, walking with the Boeing CEO. Day two of
that
testimony.
That was tough yesterday, man.
Phil's with us now. Phil, you described his performance yesterday. I think it was average at best is how you said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and really the second half of yesterday, it was not good. Look, he didn't have a chance to answer many questions, mainly because a number of the senators said, flat out, this company is a mess. And there are a number of problems, specifically with the MAX, with the FAA certification. Senator Tammy Duckworth from Illinois, she flat out called him a liar. She said, you lied, your company lied to us. That's what I asked him about in the hallway. He essentially dodged the question and said, look, we've never been lying to anyone. We have been forthright. Much the same message that we've heard from him time and again. Guys, as bad as those questions were yesterday for Dennis Muilenburg to sit through, it may be even rougher with some of the representatives who are going to be talking today. Peter DeFazio, I talked with him the other day. They've been doing an investigation. His committee's been doing an investigation. They are loaded to bear, and they're going to come at him hard, and I think he's not the only one. I think there will be more specific questions about what he knew, when he knew it, and specifically with the chief technical pilot and the instant messages and the emails that he exchanged with another Boeing employee where he suggested that he misled regulators. Yesterday, Dennis Muilenburg said, yes, I was aware of those emails and instant messages before the second 737 MAX crash in March of last year. I mean, that was one of those moments where everybody kind of looked around at each other and said, okay, were you aware? Or did you read the message? Did you know that? What specifically did you know about those messages? And why wasn't that brought up immediately in terms of discussions with the FAA, et cetera? Guys, back to you.
Yeah, Phil, I got to tell you, it felt a lot like when Tim Sloan, CEO of Wells Fargo, went to Washington. And it really wasn't Sloan's fault. He was cleaning up John Stumpf's mess. But he was hurting the franchise. And he told me, if he was hurting the Wells Fargo franchise, he would resign. I thought that Dennis was contrite, but I think that if the board says that he's hurting the franchise, well, Phil, doesn't he have to do what Tim Sloan did?
Which brings up the question, if you buy that, and I'm not saying that that's a wrong theory, but Jim, if you buy that, is it better to replace your CEO now when you've got a ton of things that are up in the air and a ton of uncertainty regarding the MAX and getting it back in service? Or are you better served by saying, okay, we don't think he's the right person, but let's get through this crucial period, then we address this once the FAA recertifies the plane, whether that happens by the end of the year or shortly after the new year? I mean, that's really what the question comes down to for the board of directors.
No, it has to be the latter. You cannot do it right now. And it has to be up to the board and Dennis dealing with the board. But, yes, you can't do it right now. But I hear you, Phil. And, you know, I'm rooting for Dennis and I'm rooting for Boeing just because it's a great American company. But I understand that there are people in Washington who are basically saying, if you want this company in 2020 to be in the mix of defense contractors, in the mix of what's blessed, we're going to need a change. And I thought that was harsh because I thought Dennis was contrite. But, wow, Phil, those two options you offer, I'm taking the second.
One quick note, Jim. When this all started, I specifically brought this question to several Boeing executives and their PR people. I said, why don't you bring in an outside investigator, much like General Motors did with the ignition switch failure recall? And you bring in that outside investigator and you say, have at it. Find what you need to find. You come to us at a certain point and tell us where the problem is, who did what, and we'll take action from there. The response that I got time and again from Boeing executives was everybody said time and again, they said, we don't need that. The board is going to look into this. We're going to look into this. We can handle this ourselves. And what's happened since then, Jim? Drip upon drip upon drip of new revelations that have come out. And this creates the appearance, which we heard yesterday from the senators, of you're not being straight with us. You've lied to us, according to Senator Tammy Duckworth. And that's the problem with them not bringing in somebody with a stellar reputation who could investigate this from the get-go.
They should have brought in Ted Wells from Paul Weiss. We don't talk about Fox being a corrupt or crooked company or anything because Ted Wells went in there and he said, here's how we see. You're absolutely right, Phil. And Ted would have been the guy beyond reproach, tough.
Yeah.
Think about the NFL. They went in the NFL. They decide, you know, the NFL, which some argue is the most powerful organization in the country. And Paul Weiss basically said, here's the way we see it. You are so right, Phil. They should have brought in someone like Paul Weiss who cannot be bought.
Phil, we will leave it there for now, but I'm sure we will see you,
you bet, guys.
Often throughout the day. That's our Phil LeBeau with his
hearing starts at 10 o'clock.
All right. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Why didn't they listen to Phil? Why didn't they? I mean, is there anyone who knows more? I'm not kidding.
Boeing thought it knew everything, maybe.
Well, they should have listened to Phil. Phil covers the story. He understood.
Let's pivot to another company in the crosshairs, if we could. That's J&J. Johnson & Johnson is rising this morning. The company says its testing found no asbestos in Johnson's baby powder. That testing included a single bottle that the FDA had said contained trace amounts of asbestos, prompting J&J to recall a lot of 33,000 bottles earlier this month. Back in December, CEO Alex Gorsky defended the product when talking to Jim on Mad Money.
I unequivocally believe that our talc, our baby powder, does not contain asbestos. And that's demonstrated in thousands of studies. Studies not only conducted by Johnson & Johnson, but studies conducted by independent authorities, well-respected authorities, where we work closely with regulators who are overlooking the methodology. And by the way, throughout this process, we also not only use the best testing methodologies that were available, but we continue to improve them through the years.
Okay, so that's Gorsky with you.
Beyond reproach.
Fryer.
This man's beyond reproach. Stuff really drives me crazy. I know the planet. Look, the reporters who are covering it are very, very good. And I absolutely, the Reuters reporter who won the award at Knight Pageant, she's fantastic. But this test is, I thought, conclusive because they did it's independent. They did much more work than the FDA.
Yeah, much more strenuous
much
testing
more,
than
yeah,
the
much
FDA.
Much more rigorous. Much more rigorous. But the key is Walmart, CVS, and Rite Aid. Are they going to bring it back? You know, I got to tell you, I put baby this stuff on every day. And I admit, I stopped. I stopped because the FDA, I'm back. I trust Alex Gorsky far more than the FDA because he's more rigorous. He is a man who's staking his whole reputation on this, on these tests.
Will customers, will mothers trust Gorsky over the FDA when it comes to their babies?
No, the FDA has to back down, and the FDA is probably unlikely. But you trust the government versus Gorsky? I know. I go with Gorsky. Right. Gorsky, who was a ranger in the Army. Gorsky, who is sued every day by plaintiff's bar and never loses his cool. Gorsky, whom I would vote for president if he ran for president, and our country would be much better off. That's how I feel about him.
Okay. That's quite a statement. That stock's up 2.5%. Bob Pisani, among the big movers this morning here on the big board.
Morning, Scott. Morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. 30.39. Remember, that's our old closing high, just shy of that, but kind of an indeterminate open this morning here. If you take a look here, remember our leadership for the month. Actually, healthcare's done very well. Utilities have lagged. Tech's done pretty well, particularly semis for the month here. Banks have done exceptionally well. That's a market leader. Yield curve really helping that. Consumer staples actually are down. So this is sort of indeterminate trading, I would say. Keep your eye on the big picture, though, the trend. First thing about October is no blow-ups. So take a look at our month for October here. It's been basically a slow melt-up, despite the fact that we had a little bit of chaos here around trade issues and tariffs. It's been a slow melt-up here. And again, we're just off the historic highs. The other thing that's important is we're getting some rotation, and that's why the market is holding up so well. And that's what's kept us generally in the green all throughout the year. So take a look. Banks. Hey, the Fed's helped here. We've got a higher yields and a generally steeper yield curve for the month. That's helping the banks. Healthcare, which is a defensive group, up. Techs help, particularly semiconductors. So you've got defensive as well as cyclical sector that are up here. And the old leadership groups, defensive stocks, consumer staples and utilities, are actually down this month. So we are getting a little rotation that's really helping the market. I think that's extremely healthy for what's been going on here. So if you take a look here, what am I worried about? Complacency. I have been complaining for weeks about the volumes. It's terrible. ETF volumes are below normal. General equity volumes are below normal. Even options is below normal trading. Nobody is out doing a lot and committing a lot. Generally, we're moving up on lack of selling, not enthusiastic buying. And that's an important mindset difference. The VIX is at 13. That may be an obvious reason. There's not a lot of reasons to trade. But call ratio has generally been low. That means traders are not going out and trying to buy protection for the market. They're not terribly worried. This is classic complacency. So the market is kind of like a coiled spring right now. It could be sensitive to any kind of thing that would move it a little bit to the downside, like, for example, the Fed coming out and trying to imply we're done for the year. We're not going to do anything else. So that's why there's a little bit of risk to the market. Obviously, the Federal Reserve has helped. They've been buying those short-term treasuries again. That's been helping the yield curve. But we want to know what the direction is. What are they going to be doing? And that's what we're going to hear about today. Remember the old Fed statement and what their last committee statement was? The committee contemplates the future path of the target range for the Fed fund rate. It will continue to monitor the implications of income of information for the economic outlook and will act as appropriate to support to sustain the expansion. That's the key phrase. We'll look to see if they change that. We're looking for any indication that this is three and done at this point and how the market might react to that. And as I said, guys, the coiled spring idea, the complacency is very, very high right now. So the market is vulnerable to some short-term shocks, and it could come from the Federal Reserve. Scott, back to you.
Bob, we appreciate that very much. That's Bob Pisani. Now let's go to the bond pits. Rick Santelli at the CME Group in Chicago. Good morning to you, Rick.
Good morning, Scott. You know, a fascinating day. Not only did we get an important bit of data in our first look at third quarter GDP, but we're also obviously awaiting the Fed and its decision. And the reason that's interesting is because yields, and not only U.S., as a matter of fact, global yields most likely leading, have been rising all the way through October into this meeting. But after we had the good data points on GDP, everything reversed in the U.S. and indeed in Europe. Look at a 24-hour chart of two-year note yields. We're up at 165, kind of the high watermark, 166 for this cycle. That was up one. Now we're down two. If you look at tens, they were up a couple of basis points as well. They're now down 3 basis points. 180 was the breakout that we had on Monday. And really, this is a key level, and it shouldn't surprise anyone that the Treasury complex goes in on an important technical area into a Fed meeting. That happens actually many times. Look at a one-week chart of those 10s, and you can really see not only do we have the breakout, but, of course, we're starting to slip back. The Boone one-week chart, it also slipped back a bit. Do keep in mind that 10-year Boones are at a three-month yield high in the neighborhood of. They've reversed a bit. The two-year, the shots in Europe's at a five-month high. Finally, the dollar index, it benefited also from the data points, but it has not benefited from the easing cycle. It is now back down on the day. You go on to watch 98 in the dollar index after the Fed decision. Scott and Jim, back to you.
All right, Rick, we appreciate it. Thank you. Coming up, HBO Max and the streaming wars. David has that exclusive with AT&T COO and WarnerMedia CEO John Stankey. Top of the hour. Squawk on the Street is back right after this. Let's take another look at AT&T. That stock is up 35% so far this year. This morning, getting another bump by about 1.5%. Stay tuned for David's exclusive with AT&T President and WarnerMedia CEO John Stankey on the launch of the HBO Max streaming service. Up next, though, it is Stop Trading with Jim. All right, it's time now for Cramer and Stop Trading, and we have a big one after the
bell. Yeah, Street.com is Eric Johnson, who's the best. He just got through the checklist. Seven important things you need. One, iPhone revenue and pricing trends. Two, wearables growth. Three, service growth and commentary. Four, iPad and Mac sales. Five, Chinese sales trends. Six, gross margin trends. Seven, stock buybacks. I'm going to be all over these. You have to have everyone be good with the stock where it is right now.
I'm going to ask you that. Is it overextended?
These all have
into
to be
the
good.
Number?
These all have to be good. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot. That's a big steeplechase.
And China and the narrative around that.
It's a steeplechase. You know, I'd like to hear the buybacks be. Did they buy back stock? And look, I've got to tell you, I want to hear shortages. Air. I love the earbuds.
The new ones?
Yeah. Well, no, I haven't got them yet. I need noise cancellation because crying babies. Look, I mean, I love babies. All right. Everybody loves babies. But I have gone from first class to coach. If there's a crying baby, these apparently are the answer. Don't first class the net.
You know. Wait a minute. You've gone back behind the curtain, not in front of it?
Absolutely. Crying baby, I'll take any seat I can get. But not anymore. Now I'm going to get these. And watch. I know that there's some shortages, and then there's the issue where there's real shortages. Tim has to be on his game. And he has to be on his game because of all this nonsense about people don't like their programming. One program? I mean, if the guy wanted to buy CBS and Viacom, he could do it. If the guy wanted to buy the NFL, he could do it. I mean, honest to God, I mean, this is ridiculous. The idea that he's being, I mean, yes, David is out there with HBO and they got a lot. I think that millennials don't even know that they're paying for the bill. They just, I got my Apple bill yesterday. It's like, you know, it comes in, it's email. By the way, my credit card, they told me I was past due. I was mortified. My whole
credit. Apple credit card?
Yeah, my FICO score dropped by like 300 points. They told me I was past due. I didn't know how to link it to my Chase account. Now I'm like, I'm telling you, I couldn't buy a bungalow now after that FICO change. They reported
like
me.
Like 450 now.
Yeah.
What's coming up on Mad tonight?
I got Trex. You know, look, I use Trex. You can't even tell it's not good. I love that. Wingstop had the best numbers of any of the restaurants. Much better than Yum. Sorry. And so we're going to talk to Charles Toy Morrison. I tried to get a Wingstop franchise, and he said, "How do I get one?" He goes, "I don't know. Get 20 McDonald's franchises and 4 Burger King. And maybe I'll even speak to you." He gave me the Heisman.
This has been fun. Have fun tonight.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.